This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody, here we are. Episode 5 of Ask Kevin Almost Anything, part of the 6 Degrees with Kevin Bacon podcast. This is it. This is our last episode of season 1. 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon. I can't believe we have done this. This was a germ of an idea. It came together. I can't believe we're here. We've had amazing guests. Oh my gosh. So many interesting conversations that we've had with people. I've learned so much doing this. And also, the responses that I've got have not only been, a lot of them broad, but also, like, people really touched or people affected by something that they heard, which is really what we wanted to do, right? Stacy Houston is here with me, as usual, for Ask Kevin Almost Anything. Stacy Houston, who is the executive director of 6degrees.org. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's been an amazing season, and we've had such an outpouring of support and just positive thoughts and comments and new friends and old friends, and it's just been so much fun.
Yeah, it really has been. We've had our regular podcast with celebrity guests, but we've also added this kind of fun version of it, which is Ask Kevin Almost Anything, where people are sending in questions that are sometimes related to charitable things and sometimes not, just things that they want to know from me. And for me, it's really fun because, you know, a lot of times you do, as a entertainer, when you're trying to promote things, you do interviews, and you do those interviews with journalists, whether they're, working for a newspaper or they're on the talk show or whatever, but they have a journalistic point of view. And even when I've gone and done, Q&As, my favorite part of a Q&A, even if it's a great interviewer, is always the things that I hear from the audience whenever the questions are opened up to the audience. And to me, that's what Ask Kevin Almost Anything is. It's kind of like opening up the questions to an audience, to people who aren't journalists, yeah. people who are, you know, just regular people who want to hear about yeah. stuff.
Real questions.
Real questions.
Yeah.
Real questions, real talk. What do you think? Should we jump in?
All right. So, yeah, we should jump in. So this episode is, like you said, our last. And so we had just such an outpouring of questions where people, you know, went on to the sixdegrees.org site /AskKevin, and they left voicemails or they submitted text or they DM'd us. And so this is our attempt to try to get as many in as possible in this last short episode. So bear with me. We're going to go through as many as we can here, but it should be fun.
All right.
So the first one is kind of like a two-parter from Lisa Thomas. And her question, the first part is, what was it like to hear the Six Degrees game for the very first time?
Oh, well, Lisa, thank you for the question. I could tell you that Six Degrees, picture a world where there was no social media. Picture a world where the idea of something being viral really just had to do with, you know, a cold. There wasn't, the internet existed, but not to the extent that it does now. No smartphones, for instance. And I just started to kind of hear about this idea of the 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. People would say to me, hey, my friend's cousin invented a game about you. Or I'd say, what? Or they'd come up to me and say, I'm so hungover because I was playing your game last night. And I really didn't know what it was. And they started to explain to me that it was a drinking game that they were playing where, you know, where you took an actor and that actor had to be in a movie that was in another movie with another actor in that movie and another actor, and that you had to connect it back to me in 6 degrees or less. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. And frankly, I was kind of horrified by it. It was imposter syndrome. I thought that the joke of the game was that, can you believe that a lightweight like this can be connected to any of the great actors in history? You know, Laurence Olivier or whoever it was, Meryl Streep or whatever. I also heard Howard Stern talking about it. I would listen to Howard Stern, you know, every morning, and he was on the radio. It started out as, you know, as a New York, that's where I first discovered him, when he was local to New York. But and then he started talking about 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I was like, whoa, what's that? And then there was a Jon Stewart had a nighttime show, and I went on as a guest. And unbeknownst to me, they had asked these young men from Albright College in Pennsylvania to also be guests on the Jon Stewart show. And they were the college kids who had, you know, come up with the idea of this game. And I was like, I didn't like it. Let me put it that way. I didn't like it. And over the years, I thought to myself, well, it's just going to go away. And it just didn't go away. You know, it just hung in there. And eventually I decided to, you know, embrace the beast. You know, if you can't beat them, join them. And that's when we created 6degrees.org and decided to take, you know, something that was quickly becoming sort of like a brand, its own version of a brand, and turn it into something positive. Her second part of the question looks like, from Lisa, is if I know any celebrity who hasn't been associated with me. I'm not sure. I mean, technically the game is not really about associating. It's more about like how many, if I've worked with somebody, have they been in a movie with somebody else who's been in a movie with me, or, you know, how long, many steps. But I can tell you that based on the amount of movies that I've done and the amount of people that have been in the movies that I've done. I've done a lot of movies, a lot of big casts, you know, JFK or something, which is like such an ensemble. It's pretty hard to get past maybe 2 or 3 degrees at this point.
I think I've heard people ask that before, and I've always wondered, like, if someone has been able to say, like, no one's connected. But I think they say that, like, we might not be connected by 6 degrees anymore. It might be more like 5 degrees.
Yeah.
Just because there's so many people.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely. You know, and as I've said before, you know, the thing about 6 degrees and 6degrees.org is when you take me out of it, the concept is a beautiful concept because it means that all of us who are riding on this planet do have connections. And, you know, connections are the things that hopefully, if we can try to remember them, will inspire us to not hurt each other. You know, that's the good side. That's the good part of what this game could be.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. right. Question number two, Priscilla Hesner. And her question is, what was your favorite movie and leading lady to work with?
Wow. Okay, well, I have to say Kira Sedgwick, because otherwise I'll get in trouble. Yeah. But taking her out of the equation, I'll start with favorite movie. You know, it's funny, Priscilla, I don't really have favorite movies. I have a weird association with my movies, because I see them once or twice when I make them, and then I kind of put them to bed and I don't really look at them anymore. So my feelings about them are more related to the experience that I had making them. Like when I think of something like, you know, Tremors, for instance, what I think about is my wife being pregnant, being in the desert, the sunsets, the heat, you know, the pizza place in the small town of Lone Pine. I don't think about the actual movie that much. I remember, you know, my shoes or something like that. So I can't really say that I have a favorite. And it's also, you know, I look at movies differently if I'm not in them. You know, if you ask me for a list of, you know, my five favorite movies, it would be hard to do, but I would definitely be able to think about it. But I couldn't make a list of five favorite Kevin Bacon movies. I think that would just be weird. I don't know. It just wouldn't feel right to me.
So then what would be one of your favorite movies? It doesn't have to be like the number one favorite movie, but if you had to say like this film that you watched that you weren't in was something that was like very memorable or moved you in a certain way, like what is that?
Gosh, there's so many, but I love Spinal Tap. That's one of my favorite movies ever. And obviously because I have associations with music and with touring, but I also thought that it was just absolutely hilarious. I'm so excited that they're making another one. You know what I just watched the other day? Just kind of randomly, Kira wanted to watch it. It was Dog Day Afternoon. Boy, what a good movie that is. Al Pacino, John Cassell, just absolutely, Sidney Lumet directing, shot in New York in the 70s, just an amazing movie. Ordinary People, we were talking about the other day, so great. You know, I'm a little bit nostalgic about the movies of the 70s, because when I became an actor, moved to New York, was 1976, and so, you know, those were the movies that I and the people that I was looking up to so much. Midnight Cowboy, oh my gosh. Dustin Hoffman, John Voight, amazing. I mean, look, the list goes on and on.
That's great. I mean,
yeah.
I was going to say that you hit on something, because you're talking about how you think about movies and kind of like what was happening at that time. Mm-hmm. That's like our human connection to something. It's the same way with music, right? Like, if I say this song is my favorite, it's really because of like what was happening in my life and how that song got me through it.
Sure.
Or reminds me of like this really happy, fun time, right? So it's kind of that emotional connection that we make with art generally, yeah. I think.
Yeah, soundtrack of our lives, and always goes back to what our emotional connection was at that time. But that's one of the great things about creating art, you know, is that, you know, every once in a while it's one thing when somebody says, hey, I really, you know, I liked you in that movie. It's another thing when somebody says, that movie really helped me when I was going through a rough time, or it made me realize whatever, you know what I mean? It's a pretty cool thing that happens not all the time, but once in a while.
Yeah.
She also wants to know what was my favorite leading lady. well, let's see. I mean, I don't know if this really applies because I was a bad guy and she was the hero, and she, spoiler alert, she ends up killing me. But I would say Meryl Streep. I mean, you know, I had always loved her work. I think that she is, you know, singular in that she, a lot of us aspire to a level of, you know, to try to become a chameleon in our work and then the parts that we do and try to keep people surprised and switch it up every time. And I don't know that anybody has really done that quite like Meryl. I mean, I think she's just, you know, has embodied so many different kinds of people from all kind of walks of life and all, you know, places all over the world. And, you know, she's just, you know, kind of a master. And also one of the most pleasant people to work with. And we had a lot of scenes together. And this was a movie called The River Wild where I was, you know, basically, you know, kidnapped her. And, you know, so I don't think I'd quite call it a leading lady, but she was the lead and she was a lady. So I'll go with Meryl.
That's awesome. It's good to hear that she is as great to work with as you say, because, you know, the whole don't meet your heroes thing, you always want to hope that they're as wonderful as they seem like they are, right?
Yeah, totally, totally. And I don't often get intimidated by actors. You know, I get much more intimidated by meeting, you know, or playing with, you know, famous musicians. But actors, you know, I don't know, they don't normally scare me. But, you know, meeting her and going to our first table read, and I was not a kid. I mean, I already done a bunch of movies. I mean, I'd done a ton of movies. Was like, oh boy, whoa, this is like, and you know what she does is she just creates an environment right away where everybody knows that we are all in this together and that we're going to roll up our sleeves and we're going to get to work on making this the best movie that we possibly can. Like there's not a moment of, well, I'm the, you know, I'm the star, I'm running the show. You know, she's very, and it has to do with theater, you know, when somebody is really aware that you have to play the play, or in this case, the screenplay, that all the pieces have to be working, and that includes all the other actors. So, yeah, she was great.
That's fun. Do you want to read the next one?
Oh, it says, do I have to? You're an incredible actor, and first remember seeing you in a Footloose. Are you ever coming to Cincinnati, Ohio? No, I refuse to come to Cincinnati. I will never come to Cincinnati, Ohio. I've been to Cincinnati many times. What are you talking about? I mean, that's part of the great thing about having the Bacon Brothers band is that we haven't played in Alaska. We haven't played in Puerto Rico. I don't know if there's many more states that we haven't played in with the band.
You played in Hawaii?
We played in Hawaii, yeah. And maybe one of the Dakotas. I'm not sure. I know that we played in at least one Dakota, but which one it was, I forget. But yeah, no, I love, you know, Cincinnati's awesome. I'm trying to think what the name of the club is there that we played. So yes, we will no doubt be rolling through again. And I haven't shot anything in Cincinnati. I shot a movie in Cleveland, but probably people in Cincinnati, when they hear me say I shot a movie in Cleveland, they roll their eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, I think Ohio, this year they're having the eclipse, you know, the totality eclipse is happening again this year.
Uh-huh.
Are you aware of that?
No, I'm not aware of
that. It happened like 7 years ago.
No kidding.
Yeah. My husband and I, we drove down to Tennessee, it's like 11 hours, so that we could stand in a field in the middle of like nowhere for a minute and a half and see this eclipse. And I will tell you, it was life-changing. It was one of the coolest things I ever did.
Oh, good for you.
And it was, we were in the middle of like a, you know, the wilderness, and we were in front of a lake. Mm-hmm. And when the eclipse happens, everything goes dark, of course, right? And you can take off your glasses and look up, and you just see like that ring around the sun. Mm-hmm. And everything in the wilderness just like got quiet. All like the locusts that you usually hear, the chirping stops. And then all these fish started jumping just straight out of the lake. It was wild. It was really, you start realizing right in that moment just how that's all interconnected, and how, you know, wildlife responds to those types of things. But this year, because it's 7 years later, we kind of were tracking it. I'm like, anytime it's happening in the U.S., we're going to go to it. And it's going like, I want to say through Texas all the way up through Maine, but part of it goes through Ohio, which is why I'm telling the story. Coming back to
So you have to be exactly at the right latitude or whatever it is.
Some people will go like close enough and they'll see like a partial.
I remember this. Yeah.
Just do the totality. It's like, and this one is going to be like 4.5 minutes. So it's like much longer that you get to kind of experience. But I want to say it's actually going through like totality is happening in Cleveland.
Oh, wow. But you have to you have to pray for a sunny day?
Yeah. That's actually what happened with this last one. We were going to be going to North Carolina, which is a lot closer. Mm-hmm. And then a storm started moving in. And we were like, no. So we just like hooked a turn and drove into Tennessee. And
you guys are so cool. That is so great.
Like, I mean, it's like pre-kids, right? You're like, we're going to do this.
Right.
And we did this disbursement camping just like on the side of the road. We found this farm and they were like, come on in, $30. You can stay here and you can use our showers. It was like, and I was like, okay, this is Middle Tennessee. Like, is this, are we good? But it was fine. It was really fun. Actually, they had like a live band. They made a party out of it. Yeah.
Just people just had a farm on the side of the road and they just.
And a farm. Yeah. They like made so t-shirts.
Cool. Oh, it was really cool. That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah. So if you're listening and you are close to the totality line, you have to make that drive.
What month is it? Do you remember?
It's in April.
April. Wow. Mm-hmm. I hope it comes through. I think I'll be in Atlanta. I hope it comes through Atlanta.
Yeah.
Or someplace within, you know, swinging distance.
Driving distance. Check that out. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's very cool.
So yes, okay, that's your answer. You have been to Cincinnati and you will be back to Cincinnati at some point.
Yes.
Okay.
And I've never seen the what do you call it?
It's like a totality eclipse.
Totality eclipse.
Someone's probably listening. They're like, that's not what it's actually called. But it's, the totality eclipse. It's like, it's very, very cool.
Can't wait.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us. They burned us and subject us to really horrible, cruel and unusual punishment.
After my personal experience at Provo Canyon School, I was shocked to learn that a man named Robert Litchfield, a man who got his start at the school that I went to, would go on to create a multi-million dollar empire.
He was trying to brand us, so we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
The Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They prey on, you know, a parent's really natural and beautiful love for their children in a really, really, unfortunately, effective way.
At this time in my life now, if someone presented this program to me, and not just because I've already experienced it, sham, scam, beware.
Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season remind us to embrace change and fearlessly look toward the future. Like Andrew Jarecki, award-winning filmmaker and creator of Movie Phone.
The studios didn't really control the theaters didn't control the studios. And I thought, well, there's a window in here where I could make things easier for the consumer and also make something that would be very useful for the industry.
Or Kellen Kenny, Chief Marketing and Growth Officer at AT&T, who installed fiber in customers' houses rather than leading from afar.
It is so crucial that you spend time with the customers. That is the best lesson.
In these exciting times, we're looking to the math, the strategy and analytics, and the magic, the creative spark, more than ever. Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
So this next question came in through our DMs, and this was, you know, have you ever done a podcast with the Footloose cast? And they kind of listed Sarah Jessica Parker, John Lithgow, Diane Weiss.
Weist.
Thank you, Diane Weist.
No, I've never done a podcast with the Footloose cast, Sarah Jessica Parker, John Lithgow, Diane Weist, etc. Yeah, I don't know what that would be. I mean, I could see, you know, we could talk about the memories of it. I don't think it would be enough for multiple episodes. It would maybe be one episode. Maybe there's a podcast where they bring on casts of movies. You know, it's interesting. I saw a reading of a play recently, which is called This Is Our Youth. And it was a fundraiser. And it was Mark Ruffalo and Matt Damon. It's a play by Kenneth Lonergan that was a big hit, I guess probably, I'm guessing it was maybe in the 80s or early 90s. And Mark had played the part when he was playing like, I think a 19-year-old or a teenager or something like that. And I think Matt Damon went to and did it in the West End in London. But for this benefit, they did a reading of it, and now they're grown men, you know. And Mark actually had a giant, like a Santa Claus beard and white beard. And it was so interesting because you saw people as older people play characters that they played when they were younger. And there was something really kind of like fascinating and touching about that. So I don't know, I was chatting with, you know, Ruffalo. I was like, this is a great idea. Like, people should do this, you know, with you know, material, plays or movies that you've done that are, you know, have a certain, this play was pretty iconic in New York, kind of off-Broadway theater circles. You know, this would be a thing, you know, like to do, to take old you know, things and revisit them, and not pretend that we're not young anymore, but just kind of like go for it. Yeah. So maybe that would be a fun thing to do a reading someday of that. Although that movie, there's so much dancing in it that I don't know how a reading would really work, you know, unless you were like, you know, unless I was jumping around in a warehouse or something, you know.
Let's dance. I'm like, quiet.
Exactly. Let's dance. Nobody's dancing. Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. But anyway, that would be, I would love to. I have seen not Sarah Jessica Parker so much, but I've seen John. John Lithgow and I actually did a, what was it, like one of those, we did one of those, like, you know, when one actor interviews another actor thing, I can't remember, some kind of round table thing, whatever. And that was kind of fun because we did reminisce about that movie.
Yeah, that seems cool. I mean, I think there's a nostalgia right now. Maybe it's always been that way, but it feels like there's a moment where I've seen these podcasts popping up that are like at One Tree Hill, and it's like the cast, and they're just having talking about each episode, you know?
Oh, really? Wow.
There's like, you know, people that love The Office, so it's not so much like the cast, but like The Office was such a iconic show and has spanned generations. And so like there's kind of just a show that talks about that as well. But I think that's like for the super fan. I think that's the cool thing about podcasts is that you can kind of dive deep into like very niche things that you love.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And anyone can really do it. In that case, too. So,
yeah, it is amazing. Podcasts. How the two things that are amazing about podcasts is to me now having, you know, here we are at the end of this season. How much people, how long people are willing to listen to something about one, you know, topic. Like for instance, I've sometimes listened to this thing called the Rewatchables, where they'll just take a movie and like three guys will just watch it again and just break it down and you know, and talk about like all the details of the movie, and the details that come out are just like incredible. And I'll find myself listening to all of a sudden an hour's going by, like I could have just watched the movie, but instead I've just, you know, I've been listening to these three guys I don't know, you know, just talking about the movie.
Yeah.
But also it's just, you know, how much people are willing and able to just kind of riff on stuff, you know, putting a, you know, a microphone in somebody's face and people just riff, you know, they have opinions and things to say. It's cool. I mean, it really is. It's just something that's, I don't know. It seemed like for so many years doing press for so many years, you know, everything was so boiled down to a soundbite, and you know, your talk show appearances would always be over in a heartbeat. Newspaper interviews maybe would be a little more extensive, but would basically, you know, be one line that would pop out of the thing, and that would be it. You know, that's all that anybody ever knew. And things were happening in such short little bits. And it just seems like this whole podcasting thing is, I mean, sometimes I wonder, how does everybody have enough time to listen to? I shouldn't say that.
The commutes. I know. It's like, except for us, like definitely every Tuesday.
Right. Except for us. Exactly. Exactly. Except for us. Yeah. Commutes. That's good. That's a good point. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I always listen when I'm like cooking or, you know, it's a great hands-free kind of thing to do. Yard work, you know, there's just so many things that you can do while
exercise.
You're keeping your hands busy. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I listen a lot when I'm working out.
Yeah. I mean, and you also brought up an interesting point because I kind of look at it the same way as like a museum tour. Like the first time I actually paid, like on our honeymoon, we went to Europe and we paid for like a docent tour. You know, we had like someone that walked us through, you know, a museum and actually talked to us about the art. And I was like, game changer. I always thought just walking through on your own and kind of reading the signs were enough to be like, wow, this is really beautiful. And then it just takes it to a whole nother level with someone who's like dedicated so much of their life to these works of art.
Totally.
And understanding them and knowing the historical context and what was happening when it was being created. Like, totally. It opens up things in a different way. So I think it's very similar as like, you're like, I could have just watched the movie. I'm like, but not with that level of detail, like inside and behind the scenes and what's happening, you know?
Yeah, it's exactly right. People who have a real expertise about something are very, very interesting to me. I really, really appreciate that. I listened to a guy named Andrew Hickey who has this podcast called The History of Rock and 500 Songs. And I'm on about song 180 something. And some of those episodes are 2 hours long, where he's basically giving you an in-depth rock history lesson on the song, on the political structure at that time, on things of a scientific nature. I mean, it's just incredible the kind of research that this guy does. Everybody who plays on it, how they're connected, a lot of Six Degrees stuff. Anyway, I love experts. If you have the means, I'm totally with you. Sometimes it can be expensive, but tour guides are just the best when you go into some kind of a museum situation, really. Or I love that. Well, should we move on to the last one?
Yeah. You want to read it?
Okay. A documentary on Netflix called The Movies That Made Us - Forrest Gump stated that Kevin was offered the role of Lieutenant Dan. Wait a minute, but turned it down. Is that true? And if so, why did you turn it down? You idiot. You could have been in Forrest Gump. Okay, so first off, let me say The Movies That Made Us, Forrest Gump. I should watch this documentary. Sounds fun. I guess they pick a bunch of different movies and then...
It seems like.
Yeah, yeah. I was offered the role of Lieutenant Dan, played by Gary Sinise, I believe that was Gary.
Yeah.
Who was also... Actually, there's an interesting connection. Gary Sinise and Tom Hanks were in Apollo 13. So, I don't remember if I turned it down. I don't remember being offered it. I don't remember any of those things. I'd have to check. Let me check my email. I don't think there was an email.
Did you black it out? You just...
I blacked it out, yeah. It was too painful. The fact that it came out, it was like one of the biggest hits in history. And, it was just too painful for me. I have to try to forget it. No, being offered things is a strange... It's a strange process. Just a little bit of... behind the scenes movie stuff, because the casting process, sometimes what happens is that someone will say, there's a movie, are you interested in this movie? They're interested in you, would you like to read it? It's not really an offer, it's a gauging interest that then has to slide into I want to meet and talk about it, or I want to come in and audition if that's what they're going to ask for, or whatever it happens to be. It doesn't always, and so in a lot of times in people's minds, they go, I was offered that, but you weren't quite offered that. So maybe I was, I really have no memory of it. Gary was amazing. And and even when it comes to things that I didn't get, like people have asked me before, what were you up for? Like that you really wanted, like what were those parts or, and I just, in order to survive, I have to just put them off out of my head. I just got to dump them off the back of the hard drive. And I really literally forget that I was up for a movie or not.
Yeah, I am. Obviously, the reason I was part of The Movies That Made Us, like you said, it was such an iconic movie. But it's like when you see a role like that, like Lieutenant Dan, you're like, that could have not been anyone but Gary Sinise, right?
Exactly.
Like when they land that role and you just, and it's like, that was made for him. So it all happens for a reason. And interesting.
You're saying I would have sucked in that part.
I'm not saying that. Not totally. But it's one of those things where, you know, he then took this role and I think he has like the Lieutenant Dan band.
Oh, yeah, right? That's right. He does. Yeah.
And so like, think about that. Like he's taken this role. It's not so much just been a role where he like played it and left it. It's like become this branding thing that he now uses to help, I believe, wounded warriors and like soldiers and veterans. Like that's kind of his platform.
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah, for sure.
And I just think that's really special too. Like, you know,
totally. It's totally.
He connected so deeply with that role, you know?
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people have, I mean, a lot of people have, you know, whatever foundations and stuff like that, but that is there's not a lot of people that have gone directly into that from an experience from a part. It really, you're right. It really is. It's pretty remarkable. Yeah. Check out the, I think if you could probably Google Lieutenant Dan Band, then there's probably links to some of the Wounded Warrior stuff that Gary's been involved with. So that's definitely worth checking out.
All right. So now we're going to end with our last audio clip. So it's the last AKA audio clip of the season, and we're super excited. And this one comes all the way from Holly from Canada.
Hi, Kevin. My name is Holly from Southwestern Ontario in Canada. And my question is, what was your earliest experience with any sort of charitable work? And was it something you participated in, something you witnessed? And what made it really resonate with you enough to continue that sort of work in your adult life?
Wow, that's such an interesting question. Thank you for that, Holly from Canada. Let me think about that. The first experience with anything of a charitable nature, you know, my mom was not only very involved with various charities, but also, you know, kind of an activist, anti-war and civil rights. And I think that her ethos sort of about that and about helping people sort of found its way into me. I remember once in Philadelphia, where I grew up, going up to Fairmount Park, and it was Earth Day. And I think it was one of the first Earth Days. I don't remember when that was. It would have been probably the early 70s. And there were things to do, you know, kind of, it was sort of about like picking up trash and you know, I don't know, planting flowers or planting something like that, trees, you know. And I seem to remember that I got involved with that Earth Day many years ago. And the truth is that I kind of put that aside for a long time in my life. And really, you know, as I've said before on the podcast, like gotten really so focused on just me and my own career and my drive and my ambition and all those things. And then, you know, I started to think about trying to figure out ways to give back again. And I think that it was definitely, it was more than one instance. I think it was more kind of like just my mother's, you know, point of view about the world that really pushed me in that direction. What about you, Stacey? Do you have one moment?
I talked about this a few times, but I'm just kind of a deep empath. And so for me, I was always finding these opportunities to like march or hold a sign or volunteer in some type of way. And I found that like every time I did something like that, it, you know, served people, it it did something to my kind of like happy meter, right? Like it filled me up in a way and created more fulfillment in my life. So for me, it was, you know, I've talked about experiences growing up with a mom who was legally blind, and you start looking at the world a lot differently than I think some kids that don't have that same experience. Mm-hmm. What does access look like? And, you know, what does it look like for people to, you know, move through the world in the same way equally? So that sort of thing kind of, I think, shaped me. But what I love so much, and I just love this question too, Holly, like it's just the perfect final question of our season here. Because at the end of the day, we all will find, whether it's early in life, later in life, we'll all find an opportunity to really say, like, I'm inspired to act. And it doesn't have to be something big or huge. And in fact, I think people don't take an action to try to serve or help or volunteer because they think that their contribution is too small, right? Mm. I don't have a lot of money, or I don't have a lot of time, or I don't have a lot of expertise. But in reality, everything collectively is so meaningful. And I think that's like the heart behind Six Degrees, is this, you know, the collective impact we can all make when we all do something. And it might feel like you're just doing something in your corner of the world that won't impact over here, but you never know who's watching and whose life you're going to impact by that small action, or seemingly small action, I should say. So, yeah, I think that there is a great opportunity to just start where you are. And I hope that if people learn anything from this show, it's that there are so many great causes, no matter what your passions are, that, you know, need your help and support and your voice or your amplification, so you can share about it and you can talk about it and you can volunteer, you can financially support. But there's just so many wonderful organizations that collectively we can all help.
And that is a great way to close out this season. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Stacy. Thank you, Stacy, for all of the incredible work that you do with sixdegrees.org, and for being my partner and for helping doing such great work on this podcast. And, you know, it's been really fun on these Ask Kevin Almost Anythings to just hang out and chat with you. And I also want to thank everybody that listened. We're trying to have fun here and talk to, you know, famous people that you want to hear from, but we're also trying to make an impact and trying to make the world a better place. And when you listen, that means everything to us. It really is. You know, you're the reason why we're doing this, and I'm just trying to do what I can with what I've got. We've had great conversations. Thank you for calling. Thank you for writing in. You know, it doesn't matter who you are, where you started. As Stacy said, you can do something to impact someone else in a positive way. It all starts with us. We are connected. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon has very little to do with Kevin Bacon and all to do with our connections. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.
If you are inspired by today's episode, please join us in supporting 6degrees.org by texting the word BACON to 707070. Your gift empowers us to continue to produce programs that highlight the incredible work of everyday heroes, while also enabling us to provide essential resources to those that need it the most. Once again, text BACON to 707070 or visit 6degrees.org to learn more.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared.
Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, this is Paris Hilton. Trapped in Treatment is back, and this season we're taking on WASP, the Worldwide Association of Specialty Programs and Schools.
They held us in dog cages. They starved us. They beat us.
He was trying to brand us. So we were going to become the McDonald's of kid treatment.
Join my host as they unravel the story of the largest and most shocking organization in the history of the troubled teen industry. Listen to season 2 of Trapped in Treatment on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.